And welcome back, everyone. I'm Alec Green, and for Harold Fisher, it was a dramatic scene that played out on social media and before television news cameras, homeless men and women removed from underneath the K Street Bridge in Northeast D.C. This happened last week. Want to hear now from one of those homeless men, Michael Harris, who was among the 30 or so who had to go.
I was down here for 2 or 3 days and was given a warning. Move your tent back. I was over the line 3 inches. Why didn't they do that with those individuals who were not in compliance? And we potentially could still be housed underneath this bridge.
Well, tonight we want to let you know that the mayor's office is taking its annual count of the homeless. They call it point in time count. We did invite the Office of Health and Human Services, the mayor's office, to tell us more about the city's plan of action. And as of now, they have not called us back. They have declined that invitation. Joining us in the studio tonight with me, Ebijoke Akinbowale, who is the director of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. She's going to talk more about the housing issue in the district. Also on the phone with us is Ajawa Aitero, who is an attorney and volunteer with the Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless. And as always, we invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation about what's going on, what you are seeing, and what should be done about our homeless citizens. Give us a call right now. The phone lines are open at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Ajawa, I want to start with you because you were there last week when those homeless citizens were moved. And my understanding, they moved from K Street, many of them settled up right around the corner on L Street or something like that. What happened?
Yeah, they moved, and we helped them move. I volunteer on behalf of the National Conference of Black Lawyers D.C. chapter. We have a homelessness project, and we volunteer with the Washington Legal Clinic. And the people who were moved moved to L and M, many of them. I don't know that every single one did, but many of them did. So it makes L and M even more crowded than it was. But and moved, maybe, you know, in the listeners' minds, they're thinking, you know, move like they may move. But this was like a really much more of a torturous process, because many of them, you know, it's hard to move tents and bags and that kind of thing and materials coming out.
But yeah, easier said than done.
Exactly.
Easier said than done, for sure. Ebijoke, what did we learn from that situation? As I said, this played out on social media. Television news cameras were there, print media there to document this. What did we learn?
I think one of the biggest things we learned is that gentrification impacts the homeless population as well. I think when we think of that, we traditionally think of folks that are not able to access affordable housing, but it's a lot bigger than that. I mean, this issue really came about because of local residents and business owners complaining about not being able to walk in what they deemed as a safe manner, and that panhandling had been occurring under this bridge, and that they be moved. But the question wasn't, where do they go? Mm-hmm. It was simply more of a, get out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Get out of the way. What did you want to say, Ajawa?
Yeah, and I think that it goes to the fact that many people view the homeless as other. They're not human beings that have human needs and need supports, much like many of us who have family members who have mental health problems or who have employment problems or whatever. They have a network. Many of the homeless people have no network to support them and help them. I live in the community, and I made that clear last week when people were talking with me. I volunteer, but I live right up from L. I live on L Street.
Right.
And I think it's, many of the residents may feel that they're a bother. I'm not saying they don't, but some of us don't. Some of us are compassionate and feel like we have to look at them as other human beings, and we have to figure out, we being the big we, the city and the organizations and the community. How do we provide the kind of supports that this population needs?
And I want to say once again that we were talking to the mayor's office earlier in the day and invited them to come on the program to talk about their plan for tonight, where they're going to fan out and sort of do a count of the homeless just days after this happened under the K Street Bridge. And they are alleging, the mayor's office is saying, that the district's chronic homelessness has declined by 13.5% and is at its lowest rate in 15 years. I want to let that sink in for just a second, and I want you guys to comment on that. But first, let me go to the phone lines, because it's vital that we get our listeners involved in this conversation, because they are part of the community, just as you mentioned these homeless residents are. 202-319-7810. That is the number to call. 202-319-7810. Ray, welcome to the program, calling in from Southeast D.C. What do you want to say about housing the homeless?
Hey, thank y'all for having me on. I'm a resident of Ward 8. And the mayor's office had the great opportunity to solve the homeless problem when they had St. Elizabeth with them properties set there for years vacant. They could have put them peoples in that property, allowed them peoples to maintain their own property and all that. You know, a lot of them guys I've talked to and women, they are old plumbers, old electricians, old house, you know, those are working people.
Uh-huh.
So if you put them in position to help they sell, they can do that. So you, the mayor's so busy selling off all his property to William C. Smith on everything over in Ward 8. Let them get some of that money back that they getting from all these communities over there.
Thank you, Ray, for your point. I want to have our guests comment on what you have to say there. Thank you, Ray. Those were good points.
Well, I think it's an interesting comment the caller made. I think the mayor's plan is to increase affordable housing by 36,000 units by 2025. And while the city is very much in need for an increase in the affordable housing stock and options for its residents, that alone doesn't go to address the needs of the homeless population. In terms of our addressing and ending homelessness in the district, we have a housing first model. But how does housing work first when there are a number of barriers that differ amongst the groups? There's the barriers that impact folks that are chronically homeless, our men and our women with children that are experiencing homelessness, and our LGBTQ community are absolutely different. And so housing can't be the blanket first approach to everything. Most of the folks that identify themselves as unsheltered homelessness under the age of 54 identify mental health as being the primary cause for them being unsheltered.
I want to say that as the mayor's office is fanning out in the city, they are providing services. They are providing services to the homeless tonight. As they are doing this count, and the mayor's office is saying that, you know, chronic homelessness in the district is down. The numbers are going in the right direction.
Well,
we did invite the mayor's office
the right
to appear on our program, and they have declined.
What?
Ajua, what did you want to say?
I say it's not quite true what they're saying. I got data from the Washington Legal Clinic because I like to have the facts. And even though there has been an overall number decrease in the overall number experiencing homelessness in D.C. slightly, the number of homeless singles has increased to 3,862 from 3,500 in 2018, at least 608 of whom live on the street. So I think it's, you know, we can talk about, and, you know, all of us know how statistics can be used to make one argument or the other. This is a serious problem, and it has not decreased significantly. I do not feel that the mayor and the city are really taking this problem seriously.
All right. Let me hear from our listeners out there at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Aaron, calling in from Fort Washington, Maryland, what do you want to say?
Well, I disagree. The mayor is doing a lot. We have invested a lot into the District Infrastructure Academy right in Ward 8. We are partnered with lots of Ward 7, 6, and 8 nonprofits to address homelessness, to address mental issues. We have a lot of services out there, and we do go out our way to make sure that all district residents have the needs and have the ability to not just get employed, but to be able to get those civic services that they're offering.
Aaron,
we don't talk about those type of things.
Aaron,
well, it's not true either.
Okay. Aaron, you're with the mayor's office?
We actually give stipends to for individuals to come and do workforce training.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Aaron, for calling in. I really appreciate that. I wanted to get which, you know, where you are in the mayor's office. Did you hear my question? Aaron, can you hear me? Okay. He can't hear me, so we'll move on. Okay. I want to bring in Malika from the district to talk about fixing the problem. Malika, welcome to the Insight.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I just want to say we have what they call the facts, and then we have the truth, okay? The truth of the matter is that we continuously put a Band-Aid on homelessness in the district, okay? You can get off at Union Station and come out and see 25-year-old bums. They have this thing called you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but we have to. They say they offer these programs. We're not offering enough, and they're saying the numbers are changing because of half of the homelessness they're talking about is now incarcerated, because once they, you know, are into like a shelter, they have a certain time, a certain hour, they have to be there, they have to leave there, and then they have what they call loitering because they have no place to go. The programs that they're offering, they can't get to, and we have a continuous problem over and over and over again. And we have to eventually figure out the education that needs to happen here, the financial stability that needs to happen here, the housing that needs to happen here, and not just for people who have children.
Absolutely.
These men are not, don't have, we throw our kids out, I think, like at 18, and they're supposed to have, like, some magic information. We are failing as a society, and we need to stop putting a Band-Aid on it.
Thank you, Malika. Well said. This is a multi-layered issue and problem, and our guests tonight with us have expertise on how we just do what we can. If the mayor's office is not doing enough, there are other groups and programs out there that we need to tap into. I want our guests to tell us how people can get in touch with you. Let me start with you, Abijah Kay.
Absolutely. For folks that are in need of housing counseling assistance, they can contact our office by sending an email at fec@ncrc.org. Again, you can contact my team by sending an email at fec@ncrc.org.
And that's the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. Ajwa, how can people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me by contacting the Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless. Let me pull that number up. I'm sorry, I don't have it.
If you don't have it right with you, they can Google it and find it. Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless.
And if they can ask to speak to...
We're going to take a break, and we'll come right back. We'll get more information from you. The original Quiet Storm with Jeff Brown is up next on WHUR. Stay with us on the Inside segment on Sirius XM Channel 141. You'll be able to hear the entire conversation. Don't hang up, Stephanie. And we do welcome you back to the Inside segment on the Daily Drum. I'm Alec Green, in for Harold Fisher. We're talking about the homeless situation in the district, and the mayor's office is going out tonight to count. They call it PIT, a point in time count, and they're also providing services to the homeless community that they run into as they are taking up this issue. And also the mayor's office says the chronic homelessness in the district, the problem is going down. The numbers are showing things are better than they have been, the lowest rate in 15 years. Our guests this evening in the studio challenged those numbers, though. Joining me in the studio tonight, Abijah Kay Akinbowale, who is the director of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. I do apologize. I'm probably botching your name. And Ajwa Atero, who is an attorney and volunteer with the Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless. Business. And we do have our guests holding on the line at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. I want to bring in Stephanie now, calling from the district. What do you want to say? You support the mayor's actions. Is that right?
Absolutely. I am a firm supporter of Mayor Bowser and her efforts to eradicate homelessness. She's done more than any other mayor that I can think of to help the people. She can't make them come off the street. They have to make a decision to come off the street. But she has provided services along with the Department of Human Services, after service, emergency lines to call. It's so many programs in place to help people, but there is a certain percentage of the population that does not want to come off the street. We have to be fair to her and her efforts because she's doing a phenomenal job.
Thank you so much, Stephanie, for calling in with your point of view on this. Let me go back to our guests here in the studio and on the phone. This problem is multi-layered because when our news director, Renee Nash, was out there, and I know, Ajua, you were out there as well. You ran into people who really, it's hard for me to even put it in words, but they are comfortable living on the streets, and they may have mental health issues that need to be addressed. I mean, it's so multi-layered and multifaceted. It is such a tough issue to tackle. Can you speak on the layers that we're dealing with? We're not just...
Yeah, I think there are multiple layers, which is what we've been talking about. There are many, many reasons why people are homeless. I do have to take issue with a couple of things, because it's not my experience, and I've been out there. I go out.
Yeah.
I live near there. I pass by them. I talk to them. Some of them we are friendly. That first of all, the people who say that they're there because they want to be there, well, that's not really true. I'm not saying every single person who is there would choose some other place.
Right, and there was one gentleman
are not there because they want to be.
And there was one gentleman who said
the people talk about the services Mayor Bowser has done. Well, nobody has done and said anything concretely about them. Let's look at the shelters. The shelters, the rules in the shelters say if you are a married couple, you can't be in the shelters together. So that means that if I want to stay with my husband, I can't go into a shelter. Families can't go into the shelter. Mm-hmm. Many of the shelters have, as one of the callers talked about, you're in by a certain time, but you have to be out by in the morning. So they're out on the street with all their things all day. Mm-hmm. That's not fair and adequate and humane service.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. Number two, I think that we have, much like we stereotype, I mean, you know, we stereotype people of color, we stereotype LGBTQ, all of that, and we have stereotyped the homeless. And we have the assumption that the people there are just lazy and don't want to do, or they may be mentally ill and all of that. There are many, as you say, multiple layers. I have met people there who are homeless who work.
Yeah.
They go to work,
yeah,
but they don't make enough money to get adequate housing.
Absolutely. I know WHUR has supported folks in the community who are having tough times, just as you just gave an example there. And I found a statistic that a third of the homeless people in the district, they used to have homes in the DMV.
Yeah.
They used to have homes.
Yeah.
1,054 homeless people in D.C. Found that they once lived in the district in homes prior to becoming homeless. I mean, so the numbers are there to support what you're saying there, that it's not just people who are just, you know, stereotyped as, oh, you just don't want to do anything with your life. I want to bring you in, Ibijoke, to give your point of view on what the caller said and on just the state of this issue in our community and what we need to do.
Well, I definitely think we have to be a little fair. If we just take a step back and look at the DMV at large, folks in our neighboring counties, our Prince George's counties, and in various Virginia counties, they come to the district because of the services that we offer. They find it easier to access. I know what office to go to. DC has more offerings. If I need emergency rental assistance, then my county has in its entire budget. And so that is a reality. There are programs and services, yes. But when you look at this issue, it really goes to NIMBY. This is a not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. A notification that says pedestrian passageway instead of, hey, how do we ensure that these folks underneath this bridge have long-term permanent options for housing? What is our plan for engaging with them? What's our outreach? What is our that supportive services look like in terms of case management support and funding opportunities, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. notification to clear the streets here. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that I will agree with everyone in terms of there are a number of issues. But again, we do take that perspective of it's not me. It's not something that I want happening in my neighborhood. And we're not intrinsically understanding the barriers that the homeless population is facing in the city.
202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. T calling in from the district. What do you want to say, T?
Hi. Yes, I would just want to say I wholeheartedly agree with a lot of the things that have been said. And I do agree that, you know, there are so many programs here, but I think it's unfair to keep saying, you know, that the mayor is not doing enough, that the mayor's office is not doing enough. Because sometimes if you go out and on these walks and listen to what people are saying, they're even in the dead of the cold, they're refusing some of the services and for whatever reason. So that goes back to mental health. But you have to think as well, yes, it might have been bad luck that got them there, but then you also have to understand that somehow they did get there. And whether it be, you know, there's lots of people living one paycheck away from losing their homes, but that's just not even a mental health problem. That goes back to, you know, learning how to manage your finances. There's so many more layers to it. And I think it's unfair to just kind of go out and say it's because, you know, the mayor is not doing enough. There's so many layers and they can only do so much. Some of that stuff starts, you know, in the home, and you have to peel back a lot of those layers in order to kind of really get to the root of this problem.
T, thank you very much for your point of view there. I want to bring on Elaine from Northeast D.C. Elaine calling in from Northeast D.C. What do you want to say?
Hey, everybody. How's everybody doing?
We're good. What do you want to say?
What I want to say is that I know that the mayor did offer to do shelter in each ward. Mm-hmm. Ward 4 put out a petition and said not in their backyard. So now we are the shelters because we don't have any shelters. And if we did, we need to have them with inside of the shelters. We need to have them where they have classes for them, reading classes, computer classes, because like the brother said earlier, some of these people are very educated. But when you don't get a chance or another chance, how do you go about it? We have disability, mental health out here. We have abused ones. And some people that don't even know how to say, yeah, I need help or I want help. So if we get those buildings as an efficiency mm-hmm. for each one of them in each ward, I think you got a lot of people.
Thank you, Elaine.
And volunteer and help.
Thank you, Elaine, very much. Who wants to tackle what she just said?
Well, I can say something and maybe
go ahead.
Your other guests will, too. The shelters that are, and I said this earlier, but I think people have to understand the shelters are not like apartments and places where people would feel like they can make a place a home, whether it's temporary or not. The shelters are not accessible to married people. Many of the people who I have met and people who have worked in them, not just lived in them, say the violence in the shelters is problematic. So some people say they prefer living on the street than being in the back of a shelter or whatever. So I do think that I agree that we can't just blame the mayor. I think it's a broader problem than Mayor Bowser. Mm-hmm. I personally don't think that she's made the city, and so I want to take it away because we got people calling in defending Mayor Bowser. I don't think the city has made a comprehensive effort to address all the multi-layer problem. People say that they are offered, the caller said that people have been offered and refused services. I can't say that no one has ever refused services, but the people that I work with in the L Street, M Street, and K Street, most of them has not refused services that are meet their needs. They accept food. They accept offers of shelter. But one of the problems is the limitation on shelter.
A BJK.
Well, I think it really just goes back to, again, our sense of community as a city. One, it's hypothermia season.
Yes, it is.
It's been hypothermia season runs from November 1st to March the 31st. And so I think the matter that has gotten folks so shocked and in awe is really, well, where's the sense of community, in Chocolate City right now? 16.6% of the residents in the district live in poverty. The average median income is over $117,000 a year. And so it's really challenging for a family that is working, and not that many homeless persons do not work, because we're looking at the situation, and yes, we understand what the encampment sites have, but homelessness is broad in itself. Homelessness is legitimately you not having a primary residence.
Yeah.
You couch surfing on a friend's house, you having episodic experiences of homelessness or chronic experiences of homelessness due to mental health, due to incarcerations, loss of jobs, all of that puts you on the spectrum. There is no blanket need. There is no blanket solution in saying, hey, you just need a house, because how do I make my housing situation sustainable on my own where I don't need to be dependent on other programs? And in truth, a lot of those programs that we have, they're great. They've supported us being able to see a decrease in the number of families in the district that are experiencing homelessness. But as many have mentioned earlier, that's not the same case for men. That are experiencing homelessness. And to that point, I do want to toss out that 90% of those folks that do experience homelessness in the district are African-American.
That's a good point that you need to make there. Ajua, when you run into...
There are also a lot of women. On L and M and K Street, there are a lot of single homeless women.
Mm-hmm. That's right. There was a woman who said she had 7 children who was under that bridge and moved. Her kids were not with her. And then the man that Renee Nash, our boss, our news director, spoke with, Michael Harris, said he has a housing voucher, but it doesn't kick in, I believe he said, for 4 weeks. And what is he supposed to do in that time period? And he was in a wheelchair when he was speaking to her. Ajua, when you do run into these neighbors of yours who happen to live on the street, How do people treat them? What have you seen? I want to hear what you have seen.
I have seen, I've seen people really treat them kindly. I have, when I'm talking to some of them, I was talking the other day to Joyce, who is a very well-known homeless person on L Street.
Mm-hmm.
People stop, they speak, people bring food. She said there are a couple of people who regularly every week bring some kind of food over there for her, and then of course, share with the her closer neighbors. So I have seen many of those walking through the area or stopping, driving, pulling over here. Here's some food. A couple of times I have seen people bring. And I don't know what agency they may be with or if they're just individual, bring significant amounts of food for, like on M Street, I was there one day and bring significant amounts of food for people. So I've seen compassion and kindness. But then you also hear, I know I have, no one has said this to me, but you hear the, like I call it talking to, as if they're other. I know that there are people who have voiced fear. I'm raised in St. Louis, Missouri, live in D.C. So I know common sense. I don't walk in anywhere
for the anywhere really at night by myself.
Right.
So, but I don't have fear when I'm going through the encampments. And of course, I speak to people. This is another thing. You know, I speak to people. I see other people speaking to them.
I just wanted to get a, you know, just an idea of what you've seen because you're out there in the thick of things. When we come back, both of you have done a beautiful job of describing the situation, the limitations, and that sort of thing. This is a call to action. And so, what do we need to do? And I want you to lay out some specifics for those of us who want to offer a helping hand when we come back on the Inside segment.
These are human beings that are not being treated like human beings. It is absolutely abominable.
That's Arjua Otero, one of our guests tonight on the Inside segment. Last week, just days ago, actually, when the 30 or 40 folks who were living under the K Street Bridge were told to go away and actually had to pick up their belongings, which was not such an easy task. Thank you again for joining us on the Inside segment. I'm Alette Green, in for Harold Fisher. Arjua, how did that scene impact you as just a human being living in the city?
I think not just the K Street that day, but every time I walk past, which is daily, I walk around it and see it, it impacts me. It makes me sad. I understand. I was a psychiatric social worker before I became a lawyer. I know that there are many layers to human beings. What saddens me is the attitude that so many people have that have thrown the people that are on living on the street away. They demonize them, or they make them like they're just lazy, or they don't want help, or if they really wanted help, they could get help. And I don't know how many of you and many of your callers have worked with bureaucracy. I used to work with community mental health centers. There's layers of bureaucracy. So it saddens me that we are so intelligent. I mean, from the city officials all the way in all these layers, but somehow we haven't been able to come together. And you said it earlier. I love your words, how... And the words of your other guest, whose name I'm blanking on, but NRC is we have lost the don't have the sense. I'm not sure, I don't know if we ever had it, the sense of community. I view them as my neighbors.
All right, yes. Right. And so, which brings me to the call to action. I mean, let's decide what we need to do as a community, as folks in the media, as folks who are director of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, as folks from the Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless, what is the call to action? Abijah Kay, I want you to start. Where do we need to start right now? We've got all these organizations. We got the mayor's Homeward DC plan and other things going on. But tell me right now, as a listener of this program, what's number one?
Be a good neighbor.
What do I do?
And I think as one is a D.C. native and a current D.C. resident, mm-hmm. It's appalling to me when I look at some of the way that the city has changed. And yes, I continue to go back to gentrification because a lot of what we see is a byproduct of that. Mm-hmm. And to think the energy or the fear that a lot of local residents feel when they see, hey, that dog park is popping up. Hey, those bike lanes are coming. So that
and
means
gentrification's not going away, so how do we do?
Absolutely
not. How do we
not.
Handle gentrification and balance it out with helping our homeless citizens?
Absolutely.
How do we do this?
Absolutely. It's coming. These things are coming up in my community. What do I do? Mm-hmm. And so just as quick as folks are able to write the city and say and make those complaints and say, hey, this is a safety hazard, why don't you be a good neighbor and say, hey, what can we do to help support and house our our folks that are homeless here because they are my neighbors too.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that is one area of interest. Sharing resources with Maryland and Virginia, because again, the city is inundated with folks coming in because we appear to have these great benefits and resources. We appear to have a greater channel of communication on how we educate residents and consumers within the districts on what our programmings and options are a little better than our neighbors do. And so the city is in flux with mm-hmm. folks that are coming in just to be able to have access to that. And so I know D.C., Maryland, and Virginia do some communication sharing, but we don't share funds when it comes to emergency rental assistance or long-term permanent supportive housing and things of that nature. And so I think this is something that the city would absolutely do well to continue to explore. And as we look to increase our affordable housing stock, looking at saving a piece of that for permanent supportive housing that includes those wraparound services. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have folks that are experiencing chronic homelessness, it's not going to be an overnight job to get these folks housed permanently in a sustainable manner that they can carry this out through on their own. And so they need those in-house services a lot. I mean, the city has invested in scattered site shelters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The city has done a lot of investment in some use of hotels and motels in the area, but really taking a stark turn to increase the offering of permanent supportive housing mm-hmm. as we look to increase the overall affordable housing
stock. Audra, well, let me get you in here on the call to action, what we can do.
The National Conference of Black Lawyers D.C. chapter and working with the Washington Legal Clinic, one of the things we've raised is really needing to work on policy issues.
Okay.
I love, for example, being a volunteer and being out there and helping when there's a need, but we really need to look at policy. And one of the things that I think is part of this, looking at it as other, mm-hmm. is that we don't include the population that we are trying to address their needs within the planning of what we need. So, for example, I'm going tomorrow. Street Sense Media is having a town hall meeting. It's their second one. I wasn't around for the first. Tomorrow in our neighborhood to talk about the encampments. And it includes neighbors that are, as they call it, and I should have pulled it up, housed and unhoused neighbors. It includes people who are homeless as well as people who have apartments or houses in the neighborhood, and they've invited the city. So I don't know if any of the city folk will show up, but we need to have dialogue across these groups on how do we address these problems. How do we integrate the multi-layers of needs, the mental health needs, the job needs? How do we integrate that? How do we focus? How do we examine?
And how do we get from having the dialogue to taking some action? Because I get so tired of, oh, we're going to have a day of dialogue or a town hall or this kind of conversation, and nothing ever happens from that conversation or dialogue.
But there has to be a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
See, one of the things, and we all know this from our own personal lives as well as our professional lives, you first have to have a plan.
Yeah.
But the people who have to participate in that plan are all of those involved.
Yeah.
We can't plan for, we have to plan with. But the city and other agencies have to commit to then, once we have a plan, having the resources to implement the plan. This city has changed significantly. Your guest called it Chocolate City. It's not Chocolate City anymore. You know? When I left here to go teach in Arkansas in 2004, it was 60-some% black. I came back in 2016, it was 45 or 46% black.
Well, our guest talked about the gentrification issue and how it's not going to go away. Okay. We do not have much time left. I want you in 25 seconds each to put a human face on the homeless situation. Can you do that for me? Abijah K., you start.
I will simply say that it's not enough to advocate for your own issues. Obviously, the city has a molehill and a mountain to climb in terms of addressing affordable housing. And what happens is we forget about our homeless residents within the city. And we do that because there's such need for folks that have moderate income, that are low income. But there are folks that have extremely low income living within the District of Columbia. Yeah. There are folks that are experiencing homelessness within the District of Columbia because the resources are limited for all of us. And so they might not be in the same position that you are in terms of advocating for themselves or being able to even being knowledgeable enough on how to access these programs and resources. So let's just be a little compassionate in that regard.
25 seconds. Okay, put a human face.
Is the face of Joyce. She is a black woman who is about 65 years old who lives on L Street.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have a tent because it is against the city ordinance to have tents, even though many people have them. Her concern being, I'll come back and they'll take my tent, and then I won't have anything. She is a very, very religious woman. Who keeps dog, you know, with her people giving her little money here and there. She buys, in addition to what she may need minimally, she buys what are the dog treats. So people with dogs, the dogs go to her. That's a human face.
I want to thank our guests from the Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless and the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. Quickly, Abija K, your contact information.
Absolutely. If you have any questions, you need any housing counseling assistance, don't be afraid to buy back your city. You can reach us at fec@ncrc.org. Again, you can reach us at fec@ncrc.org.
Ajua, quickly.
For the to reach me or reach the Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless, you should contact the website is www.legalclinic.org. The primary two people I work with, one is Anne Marie Stadenmeyer.
So WashingtonLegalClinic.org.
For the homeless. Okay. And the number to reach her is 202-328-5509. And if someone wants to talk with me, she can link me in.
All right. Thank you. Sorry to rush you, but we're running out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, lady, for your insight and your call to action. We appreciate your time. I'm Alec Reina for Harold Fisher. You have a good night. See you tomorrow night.